Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we chop it up about working money for millennials with the hope we don't leave you saying, I don't even know, son. I don't even know.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances, all words.
And if you've been enjoying the show, drop by and hit us with the 5 stars on iTunes. If you don't know how, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review. It helps us stay visible in the rankings, which means we reach more people.
And if we reach more people, we help more people.
Indeed, friend.
So on several shows, y'all know I've talked about the power of temporarily or permanently canceling cable to help your budget. Right now, I do not have cable, so each month I save myself $200. Each year, I save myself $2,400, and every 5 years, I save myself over $12,000. Bam! So today, we're joined by Mr. Restoro. Dennis has worked in IT for over 20 years as a programmer, system admin, and enterprise architect. In other words, he knows what the hell he's talking about and probably has that pre-approved t-shirt and flip-flops dress code I'm working towards one day in my career. Thanks for joining us, Dennis.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So, you know, let people know a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I mean, as you said, I've been in IT for over 20 years. I was born in 77, so I'm kind of on the generational cusp, kind of like an Xennial, I guess.
Yeah.
So nice. I was a little, you know, I grew up kind of in the pre-web world, but kind of adapted at an early age. I was, you know, into the Commodore 64 and all that ancient stuff. So I've always kind of had my hand in technology. And as I got older, I got married, 2 kids, and I hit kind of a rough patch with the career where I didn't get laid off or anything, but it seemed apparent that was going to happen. Luckily, it didn't. But we were going through finances and we were looking at, you know, what we could cut. And, you know, cable TV was number one on the list because we pay for so much and you only use a handful of it.
Nice. Yes, very true. And we'll talk a little bit about this. I remember I kept my cable package and then upgraded into the whole movie, like basically galore package and stars and all that. And when you have it all, you realize that it's really just all on repeat. Like I'd flip through 50 movie channels and like all the movie. I mean, pretty much the only exclusives were like the TV show. So when it's gone, you really don't miss it. I think people are like, you know, I can't live without cable. I can't even imagine a world. And like, it's really not that big of a deal, folks.
Exactly. That's the funny thing about it is like I did it to save money, but there's so many other benefits that came along with that because you save so much time because you're viewing the way you view when you have cable is kind of like a passive viewer. You plop down on the couch, you put something on, you get trapped in these marathons about the, you know, who loves the 80s and who loves the 90s.
Law and Order SVU all weekend.
You can lose days in your week due to cable. So, but when you cut it and your viewing becomes more active, you're deciding what you want to watch. You're seeking it out. And the quality, you're paying for, like the way I do it is, I mean, I have Netflix, who doesn't? And Amazon Prime, because you get so much other stuff along with that, like free shipping. I mean, if you're buying, if you do your Christmas shopping online, Amazon Prime pretty much pays for itself just there. So what we do is we have an antenna for all the network TVs, which, I mean, if you listen to Nielsen, they say 80% of all the shows, that's on broadcast network that most people watch, 80% of the top 100. So you look at those other shows on cable, we looked at it. We watched like 5 or 6 shows a year really on cable that we're really, really into. We buy those a la carte from Amazon Instant Video. And they're like $25 a season if you get an SD. It's a little more if you do HD. But if you do the math on that, you're paying $150 a year to watch all the cable shows you want to watch.
Now, how do you deal with some of like the live show stuff? Because there are certain things. So like I watch sports. I'm not sure if you watch sports, but there are certain things that you just want to watch live because they're going to be spoiled otherwise. And it's just not as exciting. So how do you deal with that part of it?
Totally get that. Well, for NFL, the local team, that's going to be on CBS or Fox in most areas. When it comes to watching sports, baseball is a big one because baseball is totally locked down. Basseball too. There are these, like baseball has MLB TV. Now you can't watch your local market teams through that, but there are some tricks you can do to where it's completely legal, but it's against their end user license agreement. Cause how they block you, how they block you is they look at your IP address and your IP address basically gives you your geolocation. Mm. So you guys use VPNs for work. I've heard you say before, right?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
So you subscribe to a VPN, but your VPN happens to be in the United Kingdom. And guess what? You get to watch any game you want.
It just got real.
Now that's not, I mean, because while it's tricky and it is a bit of trickery, it's not technically illegal. It's just kind of going around the block that they've sent you. And the way I see it is I'm paying them for this content. It's kind of ridiculous that they're not going to let me buy that content from them.
I'm going to defer to the listeners to navigate that moral gray area.
Yeah, totally. And it comes to like an ethical decision because right. I'm totally, and if you've listened to my podcast, I'm totally against piracy. I think it's horrible because most people, when they hear piracy, they think of movie stars and TV actors and, you know, people making millions. But really, think of the drivers. Think of the dude building the set or the woman building the set or the woman doing the electrical or the guy, you know, the people walking around with the gaffer tape. Like when you pirate content, that hurts them like more than anybody else, really.
Yeah. And I was going to say that that's definitely a side that that people don't think about. One other thing I was going to ask you, though. So you know how when there's things that are on pay-per-view, everyone will be on social media like, yo, where can I get the link? Where can I get the link? And it's those sites where it basically redirects you through a bunch of feeds and serves you a bunch of ads. You know what I'm talking about? To be able to watch the event. How do you feel about those?
I avoid those because, I mean, A, pretty much if you're watching TV – and you're not either paying for it straight up through like a, you know, Amazon, or you're not seeing ads, then something's kind of a little bit unethical at some point. Cause that means you're watching that content and you're really not paying for it in any kind of way. Mm. So, I mean, it's not free. Everybody needs to make a living.
Let me ask this. Do you avoid it just on a moral ground, or is there more, or ethical, or whatever the case may be? Or is it like because I know there's a lot of spam, not spam.
It's a bit of both. I would definitely avoid those sites just on those grounds alone, because you really don't know what you're getting into. Okay. You don't know what malware someone's going to be dropping on your system.
Yeah.
That's important. That's important, because I definitely went there and then there'll be a pop-up that says play, but it's not the actual play button. It's actually just another ad. And then I'm like, wait a second, why is it asking to no? And then next thing you know, your computer's crashing, it's slow, and then you got to take it into the shop or something like that. I try to stay away from those sites mainly for those reasons. But for you, it sounds like it's more of a combination of the ethical and then on top. And then, I mean, just the fact that you're in IT, you know how many miscreants and deviants are out there trying to drop stuff on your computer.
Oh, yeah, and totally. And, you know, I kind of just lump it. It's because it's not just those sites as well. If you go to a website and it's not obvious where you're supposed to click, just leave that website, because they're trying to do something tricky. If somebody's doing something legitimate, they're going to want you to hit the next button to get you to the next place you want to go. They want to give you the content you want, so it's going to be obvious. If it's not obvious, just walk away.
Yeah,
that was simple but very well put. So I think this is a good opportunity. So you market your website as one of the largest in the cord-cutting niche. What is that? What does that entail, cord-cutting?
It's groundedreason.com, and it kind of started because I'm a systems architect, enterprise architect at work. Now, if I can get people in a room, I can usually sell them on the idea on how we should construct a system. But, you know, a few years back, I realized my writing skills they suck. I mean, they did at the time. They were awful. And to get executives in a room, you usually have to write something that will convince them to have a meeting with you. So I decided to start a blog just to get better at writing, period. Mm. And we were cutting the cord at the time, like before it even started, but I didn't even intend on writing that. The original intent, which I'm trying to actually have a podcast, which is trying to kind of circle back to kind of the original intent. And the original intent was to – tech is very insular. The people that I encounter every day, it's kind of like almost – if you're not in tech, sometimes it can feel like a secret club. So what I wanted to do – yeah. So what I wanted to do was kind of boil all that stuff down so it's accessible to anyone, because it's the future. It's everyone needs to kind of get on board with the way things are going, because especially, you know, in the job world, or like if you're an entrepreneur, it's like you encounter this stuff daily. So I wanted to create a place where I could kind of boil away all of the jargon and just kind of explain things to people in a very simple manner. And the reason why cord cutting happened is it just resonated with people, and the blog just kind of took a life of its own. And it just, you know, because Google grabbed onto a few articles, and then it just, from there, anything I wrote about cord cutting, it just kind of hit in search. So I just rode that wave, and that's how the site evolved.
So you basically found your lane. You know, it wasn't something that you specifically set out to do, but you basically said, wow, there is a great response to this. People really care about this. And you've kind of just narrowed and focused on that at this point.
Yeah, because if you go out and I mean, a lot of people, when they go to start a website or they go and they start a podcast, if you go out and you look, everyone is like, you know, pick a niche. You got to go niche. And they lose sight of the fact that I find the niche finds you. It's like you go and you do what you do and you'll come upon a niche. You don't need to sit down and think what my niche is going to be. Just go out, do what you do, throw enough darts at the board and you'll hit something.
Yeah. And that's even kind of like what we did with this podcast. And Marcus, you could speak to this too, where we had another show where we talked about everything, but it turned out that the work and money topics, what's essentially paychecks and balances now, is what really resonated with people. And so now we're like, okay, here we are, you know, because that's what people are responding to. But on top of that, it also happens to be what we're really passionate about, which I think is especially important when you're getting started, you know, because some people talk about, you know, the whole idea of should you be doing what you're most knowledgeable about or should you be doing what you're most passionate about? And what do you think about that distinction? Because you could be great at something, but then, you know, not necessarily be passionate about it, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that kind of happened with me because, I mean, the name of the blog, Grounded Reason, I mean, it came about because I was the idea of like, well, first off, it was two words that were available with a .com on it.
It's good. Always a good start.
Right. And then second, it kind of made sense. It's like, I'm going to ground this reason down for you is kind of the idea. So that's where the name came from. And then from there, so the passion was originally, you know, explaining technology to folks, which I kind of felt, you know, I still kind of do that, but it's more, you know, it's more of a narrow focus now with the blog. Mm-hmm. Passion's always going to be important because if your heart's not in it, then people can tell that. It's really, when you look at someone and you say that person's charismatic, I don't really think that person, the charisma is not something that's just innate. It just means that they're engaged in what they're talking about.
Yeah, and I'm going to tie some of these back to it, but, you know, I think our listeners' hearts are in the cost saving. So which ones have you identified that saves people the most money, or maybe it is cutting cable?
Oh, well, yeah, straight up. I mean, and a lot of people, they'll try to, and I talk to people all the time that write into the blog, they'll try to kind of plan ahead on, like, I need to watch this show, I need to watch that show. Just drop cable and figure, and honestly, just kind of figure out as you go, because if you don't like it or you can't figure it out, they'll gladly take your money. You can always go back. They're not like a jilted girlfriend or boyfriend that's going to be mad at you if you decide to go give them another check. So, you know, just it's not really no loss if you just cancel and then try to figure this stuff out as you go to see what shows you want to watch. Personally, I find the best savings you're going to get is grab an antenna, tons of free content there. If you don't watch a ton of cable shows, I suggest just buying them a la carte because they sell current seasons on iTunes and Amazon. Like I just watched Walking Dead premiere on Amazon, but it's a day late. It's like one day after.
What was insane to me to that point is, so when I cut cable, I went out and I got a digital antenna. There's a different, maybe you can actually speak to this. They talked me into like this super high grade antenna that picks up allegedly digital channels. And it, I mean, it does work better than the bunny ears, as I guess that I had back in the day. But I still watch those SVU marathons on WGN, which comes in for free. And
hey.
What's the other? Criminal Minds. So like the show that I thought I had to have cable to watch marathons of anyway, still come on regularly. It still kind of blew my mind. I was like, I'm doing the exact same lazy couch surfing that I would have done, but I was paying $200 more to do.
Yeah. You get, there's less traps though. Cause that's what I find is like, you can really waste a day and you look back on it, you're like, what did I do today? Oh, I watched, you know, some people talk about how awesome the '80s were.
Yeah. Now I, you know, in full disclosure, like, it also, you're right, it makes you an active watcher because I literally have to time it around commercials. I'm like, okay, I got to make this popcorn during this commercial break. Okay, like there's no rewind, no save, no pause, no coming back to it as far as just straight antenna TV. So it does make you a more engaged viewer. Like you, like it's like old school. It's like, yo, I have to watch this right now because there will be no other additional opportunity. I'm like, oh, that commercial was funny, but that's it. Like there's no going back. I got to find it on YouTube if I want to watch it again. So you know, full disclosure, that is what's lost without the DVR box that everyone loves.
But you know, you can get a DVR if you like. They do sell DVRs that can record from your antenna.
I did not know that.
I I did not know that either.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of an upfront price for the high-end ones. Like TiVo makes one called TiVo OTA. There's one called Tableau. I got this kind of lined up on my site at groundedreason.com. You can go. It'll explain all the different DVRs and what they do. Now, there's also like a bare bones one, but it doesn't have like the you pretty much have to know when you want to record something and do it old school. Like, I want this to start at 7 o'clock. That's like $35. The TiVo one with the full on guide and all the bells and whistles will run you $400 on the startup, but there is no, that includes like a lifetime guide subscription. So there's no monthly cost to that.
Yeah.
So you have to do the math on when you will, if you're serious about it, you got to do the math on when your break even point's going to be on that.
Yeah. A lot of people, I don't even think realize, cause we pointed this out about the credit cards, when their interest doubles, essentially when they, it goes back and retroactively applies to all the balance that you haven't paid off. Most people don't even realize they're renting their DVR. They're renting their modem. Like, a lot of those just tack onto your cable bill. So if you haven't recently, you might want to look on there. Cause a lot of people are like, well, I own it now. I'm like,
Now that's a dirty secret about that is when you see those promo deals, cause I've heard people say, well, if I just, you know, I called to cancel and then they said, they'll give me just the network TVs with this basic box. And they're saying it's just as much as the internet. And I was like, well, look at the fine print, because they're going to charge you like $10 a month for the box. There's all these broadcast fees. There's all these taxes. There's all this, you know, they'll give you any kind of fee they can think of. They'll shove in there. By the time you're done, and it's usually a 2-year contract and the price goes up in that second year, by the time you're done, it's double what you thought it was going to be.
Hmm. Now, so what are some of the, go ahead, Rich.
Yeah. I was going to ask about the internet side of things, because we talk about cable and a lot of us have cable through the same provider that we have our internet service. So do you still get it through like a, you know, I guess I won't plug any particular provider, but are you getting that through the same service that you would normally get cable, or are you doing something different there?
No, that's the unfortunate part about the internet industry in the United States, is you kind of have to stay with, you know, at least most people only have one provider they can choose from in the first place. I'm lucky enough to have two. So, you know, the pricing, I guess, would probably be a little better where I am. But I mean, the trick about it is you're going to get an internet only plan, but don't let them fool you into taking like their super primo fast plan. To stream an HD show really only takes a constant 6 MIPS. So I recommend, you know, get 25 MIPS. That's really all you need to cut the cord. I mean, you can do it.
And that's MB. So that was that megabytes per second?
Yeah, megabits per second.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's usually what they'll say the plan is, you know, it's like a, you know, 50 MIPS up. I mean, downstream, 25 upstream. You want to make sure that you have, you know, 25 MIPS downstream is plenty of bandwidth. Like I said, six will do you. I hooked up my in-laws. They're still running a DSL connection at 3 MIPS, and they're able to do it. They just watch everything in standard definition.
Yeah, I think I'm on. I mean, I might even need to review this myself. Now, I'm going to try to comfort myself by thinking I'm on some kind of 1-year deal. But yeah, I think I have like 75 MBS or whatever, those, like some kind of ridiculous like century package.
Yeah, I definitely got all the MIPS.
Yeah, I did that too. I mean, because I did that too originally. And then I looked into it and I started actually, I mean, because I'm a bit of a tech nerd, I started looking at like, what am I actually using? What's actually going on? I would never go over, you know, 25 MIPS. I mean, unless you're, you know, a hardcore like downloader and you're always downloading something, then so, you might want a little bit more. But
that's a good point. So I'm assuming some of our listeners are probably gamers. Does that change that advice at all?
It occasionally does. 25 MIPS, I think, is, you know, it's a negligible lag you're going to see. It probably really depends on the game. I would think most games are going to throttle people down to a certain, you know, to keep it fair, would probably throttle you down to a certain bandwidth anyway. Because if you have somebody going in with a gigabit pipe playing against somebody on 5 MIPS, who's going to win?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're going to basically be running laps around them like the Flash.
Right, so I'm sure that there's got to be some type of control in place to stop that from happening, or the game would become very, you know, lopsided.
Yeah, good point. I got to admit, man, when I asked you the internet question, I was waiting for you to say, so I went out backside, I dug under the ground, I connected into a cable.
My kids are pedaling bicycles outside.
All you got to do is look for the grass that's slightly less green. That's where they bury the coaxial.
Yeah. No, so, but That would be awesome, what? Though, if you could get a whole bunch of people together to, like, you know, just go purchase a, like, guerrilla internet, you know?
Yeah, I've heard some crazy things, man, as far as people trying to find a way to game the system. So what are the best legal, morally above board, best alternatives you've seen and why?
Well, like I said, the a la carte, I think, is the best bang for your buck. If you need that cable feel, you know, you like to surf around, there are services out there that'll do that for you. Sling TV being one, the PlayStation View, which you don't need a PlayStation to actually watch. You can do it on an Amazon Fire TV. That's the one I recommend. You can also do it on Roku. That's one place where I'm a Roku Apple TV person personally. Mm-hmm. But the Amazon Fire TV with the PS View is probably leaps and bounds better than any of the other streamers out on the market right now, except for the PS4 or PS3, of course. So there's those two. DirecTV Now is coming out next month. They just announced it. So, and that's supposed to be, they're talking that up like it's really going to be a full-blown 100-channel cable over the internet for like $35 a month.
We shall
see.
Yeah,
I've been seeing those commercials. Yeah, I was like, it seems too good to be true. But yeah, well, maybe they're
I'll leave it when I see it too. I'm definitely going to take a look at it.
Yeah. Hey, you might need to reach back out to us so we can update our listeners. Sure. And so that's one of the questions I had here is, do you think these either data restrictions are what I'm going to call, and hopefully not get sued, a monopoly of providers like AT&T, who's already bought Dish, they're bidding for Time Warner. Do you think that'll eventually crush this a la carte or these alt cable alternatives?
Well, see, what I think is going to happen is the companies that are going out there and they're hedging by doing these internet services, I think they're more in tune to what's really happening. And, you know, you also have big powerhouses and companies like Google that want this all to change. They want to break the, I mean, I know the monopoly thing is debatable. It's at least in the oligopoly, you know, where you only have a few people who can give you these services. There's not a lot of competition. Mm-hmm. And you can tell, and if you look at the numbers, I can't give an exact number, but I am pretty sure it's around 60 to 70% of the country only have one provider to choose from, which is crazy. So if you, you know, take that into consideration, Google wants the internet to be more kind of, you know, because that's their bread and butter. They want it to be open for everybody. They're pushing, you know, gigabit fiber, very, very affordable in many areas in the country. There's new technologies coming out like, It's really internet Wi-Fi. It's called millimeter wave that they're testing that can deliver gigabit service over Wi-Fi in more, you know, urban areas. So they're looking at that. There's a lot of stuff on the horizon right now. And I think what'll likely happen is you'll get some startup in there that kind of breaks through. Hopefully they don't get bought. If they do, they get bought by Google or somebody that actually has a vested interest in internet access being, you know, easily accessible to everyone.
Now, you may have saw the news recently that Google is actually slowing down the expansion of fiber. I'm not sure if you've seen that.
Yeah, that's a nuanced thing. They definitely are like easing up on the fiber, but that's because the fiber is expensive to lay. They bought up a few of these companies that are doing the millimeter wave, and they're actually looking at doing a Wi-Fi distribution. So they still want to deliver gigabit internet to people. They're just looking at a different way to do it.
Got it.
So they're not, yeah, because that immediately I saw, because there is, I mean, there's a vested interest in a lot of these companies out there that, you know, have that put news out there that they're owned by a lot of these content distributors and internet providers. So you got to be kind of careful and dig into it a little bit, see what's what.
Now that's something that's been insane to me, even outside of the whole cable cutting telecom, just trying to figure out who actually owns what. And I saw something, it's like 90% of companies are owned by like five players or something like that. And I think it's pretty much the same thing here.
Oh, it definitely is. I mean, you'd be surprised at all the, you know, I mean, well, and now like AT&T just purchased Time Warner, which I could not believe that just happened. That's insane. It was like $90 billion. So, they're just consolidating more and more and more. So that's why I'm kind of rooting for kind of, you know, some startup to come out and kind of, or Google or somebody that's outside that industry to kind of, you know, reset it.
Yeah.
And so speaking of which, and maybe we've hit on this, how do you make sure that in pursuing these a la carte or these one-off services, you just don't put a package to the side, it actually ends up costing you more than cable.
Well, yeah, I mean, you definitely have to do the math on your monthly bills. I would just say, don't go hog wild on it. I juggle services is the trick that I say is always kind of keep an eye on this stuff. Like I watch, I like Game of Thrones, big Game of Thrones fan. It's $15 to get HBO Now. So I'll pick up HBO Now while Game of Thrones is on for 2 or 3 months. And then I'll binge watch their entire, you know, back catalog while I have it. And then I'll dump it. So I'm only going to pay for 2 or 3 months of service to watch my show. And then I'll get rid of it. And I do that with pretty much everything. I got, you know, I do it with Stars to watch Ash vs. Evil Dead. I'm a big Evil Dead fan. So, it, you know, like shows like that, I'll just pick it up. My wife likes Homeland. We'll pick up Showtime for 2 months and then drop it when it's done. And that saves you a lot of money because you're just picking shows based on your favorite show. You're really just changing your viewing to more of a – it's a show-based approach as opposed to a network-based approach.
Man, yeah, I wish I could do that to my gym membership, man. If I could do that, just pick it up for a couple months, drop it off, and then get back into it, that'd be great.
But that's actually my point because that's how they – I'm going to say loop you in, but I want to say tie you down. So those aren't contract-based services that you just subscribe and pick it up and you can drop it. Is there a fee to cancel it, I guess is what I'm saying.
Oh, no. It's pretty much you just pay. It's like any online thing that you would subscribe to. You can drop it, cancel it anytime. Most of them make it pretty easy to do. I mean, Sling's one of them. You can cancel right on their website. You can just click a button and you're canceled.
Nice.
So, I mean, and a lot of them offer free trials too, so you can check it out to see if you even like it or if it's going to work for you.
And this might tie to this, but I know we have a lot of Walking Dead fans. So, of course, I saw this blog. I'll plug it in the show notes. Season 7 of The Walking Dead House Way. You have Watch Walking Dead Without Cable. You want to talk about that blog a little bit?
Oh, yeah. It's basically a blog post that lays out all your options. Now, everybody wanted to watch the season premiere live. Luckily, I discovered that Sling TV was going to let people do that for free with no credit card. So I posted that out there. But then there's also a whole list of how to continue watching the season. If you want to watch live every night, you can pick up Sling TV. You know, you can go and you can do the a la carte method with Amazon if you can wait a day. But if you want to, you know, you can go and you can go to groundedreason.com and you can check out that article and more. Pretty much I try to anything that anyone would need to know about cord cutting, I try to have some sort of article on it. And if I don't have something, readers will ask questions in the comments and I'll put together posts based off that. A lot of my material that I write is pretty much direct answers of questions that I'm getting. And I'll kind of craft a guide to those questions.
So I have two specific questions. So with Sling TV, you can watch live. Can you also play back previous shows or previously aired shows?
See, it's again, you get into this licensing mix up. If
I asked.
Yeah. So like it depends on the show, depends on the channel. I know PlayStation View actually lets you do a cloud DVR to where you can record stuff in their cloud and watch it later. So that's a good option too. It's a little bit more expensive, but you know, you do have that cloud DVR because I think I'd have to look at $35, I think, for their base pack.
If you're like me, you probably hate grocery shopping. And if you're like me, you probably hate figuring out dinner every night. And that's where HelloFresh comes into play. So HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novice chefs like myself to seasoned home cooks. And one of the best things about this is if you're cooking just for yourself, each meal could last you 2 days. I discovered that when I was making this sizzling beef stir fry last week. I promise you, it really was sizzling. And if you're wondering how the food gets delivered, it arrives at your doorstep in a special insulated box for free. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks. Again, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks when you subscribe. Check it out.
So
that's not bad. And you talked a little bit about Roku. I'm not familiar with that service. Do you want to elaborate on kind of what that is?
Okay, well, that's a device that you would need to kind of like if you want to watch these shows on your television. A lot of times, if you really want to go bare bones and save the money, you can watch this stuff in a browser. You can hook your browser. I mean, you can hook your PC or your laptop up to your TV and watch it there. But if you don't want to deal with that hassle, you can get a Roku device or an Amazon Fire TV or, you know, an Apple TV. And that will allow you to watch these services on your television.
Okay. And so we've hit Roku, Amazon Prime, Sling TV. And I guess just to wrap up, there's one other conversation I want to have with you, unless Rich has some questions here. But any other services you want to plug or mention that we just haven't gotten to?
If you don't want to sit down and read through all of this stuff on the blog, I also have a podcast, Grounded Reason Podcast, where I cover a lot of these details in audio form because I want to make sure it's accessible to everyone. So I try to, you know, not everybody likes to sit there and read blog posts and articles. You know, some people just want to sit back and listen or do dishes while they put a podcast on and, you know, get that information.
Definitely, definitely appreciate that. And so speaking of the blog, you had one that I definitely want to touch on. So Data Science Your Life. Data Science Your Life is the name of the blog. So on the Paychecks and Balances front, you had an interview with a Michael Kirk who used data science principles to pay down his student loan debt. What'd you learn from the interview?
It's a pretty cool idea. Because, I mean, if you work in any type of, you know, technical field or like you're a manager and you have to do some sort of like business process improvement, you apply metrics to it. You say, okay, here's my goal. I'm going to come up with these metrics to measure that goal and make sure that I do things that increase those numbers. And that's basically telling that my goals are being met. Well, he takes that approach and pretty much does it to every aspect of his life, which seems reasonable, but I just never really even considered it. We had a good half hour conversation on that, and he goes into stuff. He even goes into like food and, you know, calories per dollar and protein per dollar, and actually crafts. I'm not kidding. Yeah. And he actually crafts menus and it's good food too. He's writing like a cookbook on how to do this and pretty much like data sciences and uses, cause he's an engineer. He uses this engineering techniques to almost every aspect of his life. Now, some things, I mean, that's a little bit too much for me. Yeah. I mean, but there are some things, I mean, that are very useful, like putting a list of your daily routine every morning. Because I know I'll get ready, you know, because I still work a 9-to-5-er. You know, everyone says that, but it's never really 9-to-5. No.
I'm looking for that job.
Yeah. So I have a, you know, I don't know, two kids running around crazy. I'll forget my badge, like, you know, at least 2 or 3 times a month. So he puts a list of everything he does every morning down so he doesn't need to walk back and forth around his house. He just knows and does it. And it saves him so much time. And I'm like, yeah, totally. I need to do that.
Oh, I can definitely get with that. Now, over the past week or two, I'd been doing a time audit, just like everything that I do in the morning, where I'm losing time. But then also recently I've started writing kind of like these little guides for things that I do on a regular basis just to save myself the mental energy of having to go, okay, what do I need to do next? Okay, what do I have to get? So I can get with that type. I guess the manual data format is what I'll call it. I mean, and right. and it sounds like it's a very similar idea here.
Oh, yeah. And he goes into it and he has some tricks for, like, you know, big purchases too, buying a car, buying insurance. And he tries to put a data science approach to all this stuff. And I think he'll actually make some of this data available to you. So you don't have to do the work. He's kind of has it as well. So if you want to check it out, it's Data Science Your Life. It's a podcast. It was just released on the Grounded Reason podcast.
Awesome. And we'll definitely have that in the show notes for you folks. Have you personally implemented any of his tips, and have they been effective?
Well, we just recorded it a week or two ago, and I definitely am going to do the list idea, because that is definitely one thing that will, you know, help me out. And I mean, I ran into him about cord cutting, so we did talk a lot about cord cutting, and he actually, because one thing I didn't really talk about is the time savings that you get from cord cutting. It's kind of like an added benefit because you're not really watching commercials a lot of the time. I mean, on network you are, but you've eliminated a lot of commercial time watching. Now you're like, big deal, commercial. But when you really do all the math on how many commercials you watch every year, it's insane. Nielsen says, I mean, depending on who you believe, they say average American watches 4 hours of TV a day. To me, that sounds insane. I'm thinking it's probably more 2. But If you do the math on that, you're talking about 7 to 14, 24-hour days a year of commercial watching.
Yeah. I know for some people, the main reason they have DVR is simply to avoid all the commercials.
Right. So you can cut a lot of that, you know, stuff out. And we got into a little bit about time saving. And he goes as far to speeding up all of his streaming shows by 10% to save that time. Because he says it's like once you do it for a little bit, you don't even notice it. So I haven't tried that. Yeah, a lot of the services allow you speed. Like, you know how on your most podcast apps will do that? Yeah. You'll listen to it. The same thing with these streaming services. It's usually buried in one of the settings where you can actually speed up the playback time by a little bit. He says he wouldn't recommend any more than 10% because then, you know, the viewing experience kind of goes downhill quick.
Oh, because I do that for Audible for, like, you know, when you're listening to a book or even some podcasts, I'm like, this book is like 10 hours. And when you listen to it on the most regular setting, it's painfully slow the way the person is talking. And mm-hmm. So I'll usually do like 1.5 and I'm like, all right, now I feel like I'm getting somewhere. Or if I'm really pressed to get through it, I'll bump it up to 2. But then the thing is, like, once you do that for a while, it's like you pretty much get used to your life being in, like, fast speed. And so when something is happening at a normal speed, it feels painful.
See, I'm a quick talker. I feel bad if you tried to do that on my podcast. You probably sound like chipmunks.
And that's actually, you know, I want to point out to folks, you know, they might be feeling like, oh, I can't relate to that. I'm not an engineer, blah, 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 blah. But I was amazed how much I do at work when I was going through the debt-free exercise that I wasn't applying in my day-to-day life. So, you know, we got this mission statement. I'm helping people design performance measures. I'm helping million-dollar companies. I'm, like, yelling at CEOs. And then I go home and I, like, live outside of my budget.
Yeah.
I watch TV for 4 hours in the evening. Like, I completely waste time. Another thing I was going to say is, lately I've been on this kick from the Lisa Bell podcast to read 10 pages a day. So because I don't have DVR, well, I didn't know I could get a DVR, I'll read during the commercial breaks. So I'll mute the TV, and that's how I get my 10 pages in. So then I'm multitasking, so I can get my lazy SVU binge watch in. Then the commercial comes on. I read like 2 pages because the commercial is about 3 minutes. And then by the end of the show, I've hit my 10 pages for the day.
There you
so,
go.
You know, just, I guess I have data science my life with us.
I guess a lot of people, if you have that mindset, you kind of do it a little bit of that innately. He just took it to like the 10th degree on this, because it's pretty much everything he does is kind of laid out. He even does it like a, you know, he judges his fun activities based on this stuff too. He's come up with metrics to judge like whether or not he wants to do something based on the enjoyment per dollar.
Yeah, I saw that. I was going to ask that question, but I was actually scared of the answer, so I'm glad you went into it. You can even measure your fun for efficiency was the quote from your blog.
Yeah.
And you're measuring your fun, I'm not sure you're having fun.
It definitely takes a certain like engineering analytical personality to do that. I don't know if I'm totally there. I mean, because I'm more of a tech, you know, I mean, engineering is a completely different thing. Because when you're coming up with actually designing and measuring every little aspect of the system, I rely on performance engineers to figure that stuff out and let me know the result and then tweak accordingly.
It's funny because I just imagine some kids like, are you having fun, daddy? Like, I don't think so.
I asked him that because he doesn't have kids yet. I was like, are you going to take this stuff? Or are you going to be like, I don't know, kid. You know, I don't know if we get enough fun per dollar in this activity.
And you look right here at this chart I've designed.
I was trying to imagine how that would go over in relationship. I can't imagine going into the other room and she's like, oh, like this movie just came out. And I'm like, well, actually, it's like a 0.75. Like, I just can't see that going well.
I'd definitely be having a lot more fun in the other room, not sitting here with you, according to my chart, which I've calculated before coming in here. I don't see that going. I guess maybe you have to marry another engineer.
He's married, so she's on, and she's actually, I'd have to look. I want to say liberal arts, but I might, you know, be misremembering that. But she got on board with it because he was able to show her. I guess this also gets back to, you know, business a bit too. He showed results. He was able to like show results immediately. With money savings, and she totally jumped on board with that.
Did she get on the board with the fun measurement? Is what I'd be interested.
Well, see, he's still working that one out. He said he's still trying that one, so I doubt it. I hadn't asked him that question specifically. I should have though.
You might want to ask him to master that one before he introduces that. Just a little tip.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's still in beta.
So that's all I had on this end, Rich, unless you want to jump in. But is there anything that we didn't hit, any topics and additions you'd like to cover?
Well, I mean, I could go on all day about this stuff, and I don't want to take up all your time. So really, a lot of it, I mean, I'll cover on the podcast and on the blog. We're also, I mean, while it is cord cutting, the podcast is going into, you know, other directions as well, because I'm trying to get back to that original boiling down tech for everyone. We talk about topics like net neutrality, you know, blockchain's a big one. I don't know if you guys heard, you know, you've heard of Bitcoin.
I've heard of Bitcoin.
Yeah. I've heard of Bitcoin, right, well, but I don't know about blockchain. I don't know what.
Well, blockchain's the underlying technology on Bitcoin, and I'm telling you, it will revolution. It's the next. It is the next addition to the internet that will pretty much change everything.
This sounds very Mr. Robot-y.
It's really interesting because, I mean, just to give you a little idea what it's about, you know how when you make a payment or you have a contract or anything like that, you need a firm to pretty much ensure the trust of that contract or, you know, transaction.
Yeah.
Blockchain handles all of that for you. And it's kind of, it's basically a consensus on everyone. The consensus, the firm is anyone using the blockchain.
I can literally hear the silent helicopters taking off from DC right now. So,
this is like
great, folks. Yeah, hope we have a good run.
Banks are buying into this too. Banks are on top of it. A lot of because I mean I'm in it just due to my position at work, I get to see a lot of the like I get to go to a lot of conferences where companies like Gartner and consulting companies are telling us what's coming out and what's happening. And blockchain's already hit. It's already being used by musicians and artists because they're able to kind of put all the digital rights in of their intellectual property into the blockchain and kind of secure it and make sure that when someone uses it, they're using it for the purpose they intend and they're getting paid for it properly.
Got it. I'm like definitely going to look into that. My inquisitive nature has been piqued.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I recommend, because I know people say it's the next big, huge thing all the time. This is kind of really, it's no doubt in my mind that this will be huge. It's just a matter of how long.
That'd be awesome. I mean, I hope we've introduced it here. You heard it here, folks. Berkeley. You heard it here first, folks. Maybe I should get it right if I'm going to do that. But we're going to jump to the closeout. So where can the people find you? Where's the social medias?
Okay. Actually, if you go to my blog, groundedreason.com, you can find it there. You can tweet me at groundedreason. If you have any questions, send us an email, podcast@groundedreason.com. And, we'll get back to you.
Awesome, man. Dennis, it's been super great having you on the podcast. Marcus, you were probably about to say the same thing. Of course, we want to thank everyone for listening to this episode. And if you have topics you'd like to hear us cover or thoughts on this episode in particular, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com.
And don't forget to join our email list where we share top articles we read throughout the week, work and money tips, and much more. Sign up by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email.
So again, Dennis, thanks for joining us. And until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.